Cue the defense, the best podcast in the world. We're at it.
I keep saying Henry's a forward.
Richie, who's the best striker you played against?
Henry.
And the fact that we are now taking our country and put our country on the map of world soccer, being the first African nation, the third world nation in the whole world to win an Olympic gold medal in soccer, you know, it was unbelievable.
If you're going to take the time to go and get a pig head and break my locker open and wrap my clothes in it, and send in a different message to me.
I've had to protect my family from going out into the street because you'll have random people that just coming up and abusing them racially. Even some old school managers who are British, they still have the same racial undertones like the man in the street who they're trying to condemn.
Don't. Can you hear that?
Yeah.
You know what
song this is? Don't believe the hype. What
you're looking for. Thank the same you very thing. Much. That's what I wanted everyone to understand and just feel what's going on in my brain right now, and the joy that's in my voice is legitimate. It really is legitimate. Because Koji, I'm just going to say this right now, mate, before I introduce the show, right? A few years back, there was an episode of SmackDown, I think it was, and, you know, Batista was put through a table and Booker T was standing there going, "Batista is down!" And he was saying it constantly. But for the first time, I can do this. Eddie Howe is down!
Are you really referring a SmackDown reference on Eddie Howe there?
Damn right. Damn right. Welcome to Shoot the Defence. I'm your host, Stel. I've got three co-hosts. I've already mentioned one, Kojo. Welcome back. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm feeling, you know, like a Champions League sort of expand, you know, over here. Feeling good, man. Feeling good. It's good to be here again.
Excellent. Excellent. Great to have you back on. KG, Mr. Leeds United, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
No, thank you for being back on and sharing this monumentous occasion with us.
Hell yeah, man. You know what? It was weird watching the trophy lift, man, because it's very few fans get to see their teams lift anything. So it was nice to see the team lift something, man. Can't lie. It was nice to win the trophy.
Oh, you're talking about Leeds. I thought you were talking about us lifting the Eddie Howe is down trophy.
Oh, no.
Eddie Howe is down. Beautiful. Absolutely bloody beautiful. Okay. Stevie Mac, welcome back. Return of the Mac.
How you doing, lads?
I feel good, 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 wonderful, good. Everyone else everyone's lost for words this evening. I don't know whether it's because it's too late or maybe because everyone's just buzzing, legitimately buzzing.
Wait, I'm just trying to think of ways to articulate how I feel about Bournemouth succumbing to relegation.
See, this is it. I think last week it was a little bit of an awkward conversation with Trevor because, you know, he knows Eddie Howe or Eddie Hype, and, you know, we thought, well, there's certain things we can and can't say now because we didn't know that he was friends with him, but he took it on the chin, you know, he wasn't argumentative and he listened to our views, and I think you actually got the worst of it, to be fair.
Yeah, sounds about right.
But hey, actually, do you know what? I was going to ask you, KG, because gyms have opened now, haven't they?
Yeah, yeah.
So you must be over the moon.
I would be, but mine isn't open yet.
Why not?
They're still negotiating with the council on procedures on how to make it safe. So it's still not open yet.
Oh, fucking hell.
So this would be a wrong time to rub it in saying I've spent the last 2 days in the gym. Like, just in my element.
When it's reopened, man, I'll be ready. I'm ready now, but
you're not gonna be taking photographs and putting them all over social media, are you?
Of course.
Who doesn't? You're one of those. You're one of those Instagrammers, yeah.
I'm one of them people, man.
I'm gonna quickly clean up my Instagram account and say that I'm not one of them. So I'm just gonna delete.
No, you know what I asked is because a mate of mine messaged me today and he sent me a link to an Instagram story of this girl that I used to know back in the day and I used to go to college with, and I haven't seen her for like 20 odd years. And he goes, "Have you seen her lately?" I'm like, "No." He goes, "Well, look at this Instagram story." So her account wasn't private, and I see her on the leg press at this gym, and I hear, "Rrr!" I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like, who is this girl? And I checked her profile, because again, it wasn't private, and you see these, what they call them, progress photographs. So you see a photograph of her like 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and she's changed in the space of a year. So before she was like an 8 or a 9, but now she's like China, but bigger than China. Do you know what I'm saying? Not China the country, China the wrestler.
Yeah, we've got it.
And
she's the 10th wonder of the world.
Yeah. And the scary thing about it was her voice has changed so much over the years. And it's not just over the years. I'm talking over the past year, year and a half. So I'm thinking she must be on some growth hormones or whatever. She sounds like Patty and Selma from The Simpsons, you know, the sisters. "Hey, I'm going to lift 120 today." That kind of voice. Do you know what I'm saying? So I went back onto the Instagram story, and she's tagged who I thought was her boyfriend. So I've gone into his profile to see all about him, and he is jacked. When I tell you jacked, it's like, it's ridiculous. Again, he's another one that I think is on hormones. But the thing is, he did one of those videos where, you know, motivational videos, but his voice isn't what you'd think it would be. You know, I think he's Polish or something, because he's got a few W's and Y's in his surname, but he talks like this, and it absolutely fucking confused me. Baffed. Absolutely baffed. Honestly. But what kind of conversations do you think they have, though? I mean, it would really weird me out. Can you imagine them having one of those phone conversations? You know, like, "You put the phone down." "No, you put the phone down."
I think we're all lost for words.
Although it's just one of those things that just popped into my mind, and it's like, well, what do they use? They don't use handcuffs, they use sheet wraps.
What is going on?
Cage is like, what the fuck am I doing here? I'm a serious journalist, don't you know?
I am not a journalist.
Anyway, let's talk about football. Let's go about football. Right. Which game shall we begin with? Shall we go with Southampton 3, Sheffield United 1? 2 goals from Che Adams, 1 from Danny Ings. Lundstrom pulled one back for Sheffield United. But again, dead rubber game for both clubs. I think they're both happy with the way their seasons have panned out. Don't you think, Hojo?
Yeah, Sheffield United. To be honest, a wonderful season for them. Way, way clear of relegation. Or any sort of battle from relegation. Almost a European club. So, yeah, they have every reason to be happy with their season. Southampton pulled it out of the bag. Danny Ings found form at the right time. Che Adams has finally found the back of the net. You know, obviously, he needed that one going against City. Now he's feeling a lot more confident. So, good play to him. And they bounced back. I mean, when they got slapped 9-0 end of the season, I was saying just get them the hell out. But fortunately, certain man not too far from where they are got knocked out instead. So I'm good. I'm happy with it. So yeah, good for both clubs.
All right. Well, KG, your team are back in the big time, so to speak. But I think you'd be interested to know that only Norwich have picked up fewer points than Southampton at home.
Right. So no, Norwich have picked up fewer points than anything. 21.
Yeah, but only Norwich have picked up fewer points at home than Southampton. So Southampton's home record is the second worst in the league. Now, obviously, home advantage is a big thing because, the cliche will go anyway. Do you think this is a concern for Southampton going into next season?
For me, are you talking to me? Sorry.
Well, you're the only KG on here, unless you're thinking about sheet wraps. Sorry, brother. You know.
Oh Lord.
Do you think they use whipped cream or liquid chalk?
No. So Southampton, right?
No,
Southampton will be all right next season, man. I think they'll recruit a few good players or to get in what they've got now. I think they believe in Hasselhoff, man. Well, and I was one of those also that said he needs to go. I just couldn't see how they could turn that around. But he's done well, man, and I think they'll be okay next season. There seems to be some concern about losing Højbjerg, but I don't think they'll feel that. I think they can replace him easily as well. Sheffield United, on the other hand, they need to recruit as of tomorrow because a couple of their players are already looking like they've got that second season syndrome. I'm talking like Ender Stevens, Baldock. They look like it's already becoming a bit too much. So they're going to need to start recruiting ASAP.
Do you think it's looking too much for them because of the amount of games that have been played over a short period of time and they're looking quite lethargic? Or perhaps they're just taking their position for granted because they've done so well in their first season, i.e. haven't gone down?
Yeah, no, it's a mix of both because they've got the quality when it works. But as you can see, when you watch their games and you see it's not working, they look so, so ordinary. Like, this is a level too high for them. But they've got a bit of an issue because a few of their key players have been linked with moves away. I'm talking like Egan, O'Connell as well. And I think Basham's been linked with Burnley and Newcastle too. So they're going to have to try and keep that core together. But there are a few players where the step up is starting to tell a little.
Yeah, I can't hear the name Egan without thinking of Tommy from Power. I don't know. Steve, Liverpool went to Newcastle and got their annual 3 points. Because I can't remember the last time Newcastle actually beat Liverpool at St James's Park. I can't remember the last time they ever beat Liverpool, period. Easy victory for Liverpool. I know they went a goal down after the first minute, but Van Dijk, Origi and Mane wrapped it up for them. Yeah, they've ended the season on 99 points, mate. Are we going to see a more powerful Liverpool next season, or do you think maybe teams might start catching up with them?
I actually think it's going to be difficult for Liverpool next season. I think with this year, the sort of aura that Liverpool had, and this might pain for you to hear it as a United fan, they kind of had that aura that Man United used to have of when they turn up, and you'd already had that psychological edge over the team, which gave them a goal. And it was a case of it was a matter of when they'd score, not if. Since the restart and since they've been crowned champions, you've started to see a little bit of complacency in them.
Mm.
And other clubs are going to absolutely pounce on that next year now. And I think it's one thing being the challengers chasing for the title, which Liverpool were, and City had their own problems this year, which I think helped matters. But next year, they're going to be the team that everyone wants to beat. They're going to be the team that they're going to stop them. And they'll do it by any means. You'll see a lot of teams put up two banks of four and hit long ball counters, which they've been susceptible to, where they've gotten complacent, where they've had so much possession around the opposition's box. They've been exposed to long balls. And I think Arsenal, we got lucky trying to do a similar approach to them. So, you know, Liverpool fans, enjoy it whilst you can, because I think next year is going to be a different story.
There's a soundbite for the end of next season.
Oh, God. They better not fucking win next year now.
Oh, Coach, talk to me about Newcastle United, because Steve Bruce was very desolate at the end of the game. He was talking about the amount of injuries they've got. He said that they were disappointed that they faded a bit at the death, i.e. in recent weeks. I think they only touched the ball in Liverpool's half in the first half. Yeah, so he also said that they don't want to be looking over their shoulders. They want to push for the top 10 on a regular basis. But with the greatest respect to Newcastle United, without Saudi Arabian money, which is more than likely going to happen, I don't think they're ever going to be a top 10 club, will they?
Well, yeah, because if we're going to keep it a buck, their recruitment sucks. If we're just going to be honest with it.
Oh, come on, they signed Almiron. He's their leading goal scorer, isn't he, KG?
I mean, shout out Roberto.
There we go. There he is.
shout out Roberto. You know, his man demands doing all right.
We love you, Rob. Come on, you know what I'm joking about. Come on.
Anyway. But you know, they also signed a 40 million. More like a £40 guy up top. So, yeah, I mean. They're awful, and if I'm going to be honest, their manager isn't too great either. But they need that money. If they get that money, then yeah, they can look maybe towards 11th. If they don't get the money, then yeah, they can look towards 13th again. They ain't really good. And I think the answer to your question about what was the last time they beat Liverpool, I think it was like 2015. So it's been 5 years.
Mm.
And that's when I think they had what? Who was still there? Who was in that team?
It was half a decade. I had more hair then.
Even back then, I didn't even know what a fade was. I've been saved by it now, so, you know. Yeah, there you go.
Well, you mentioned a certain striker that was £40 million. If he wasn't Brazilian and he was from Dagenham and his name was, say, Joe Linton, he'd be a second division player, wouldn't he? Or a League Two player.
Well, he'd probably be living next door to me watching the football rather than playing it.
He'd be on your podcast talking women's football, eh, Steve?
Well, don't. I'm not buying.
Yeah, don't buy Steve. Leave him to it, man.
It's right. When he starts bringing up Luke Shaw again, I will buy it.
Fair enough.
No, but still, you know the what you just said there about Joel Linton and stuff. Yeah. That's the problem with the Premier League, man. They'll rather spend £40 million on these kind of guys than just look at division below and pick up somebody there that looks like they could step up.
Yeah.
So it's all in the recruitment, man. And these guys, Haller from West Ham, Wesley at Villa. I mean, these guys wouldn't even make it in the Championship, man.
It's football snobbery, though, isn't it, KG? Because it seems to me that back in the day when the Premier League first formed, they'll buy in these big names because they wanted to boost the profile of the Premier League, which I get because you're seeing it in different leagues, you know, MLS, China, whatever. But nowadays, a lot of these signings, there's a big correlation with their popularity in social media. And by that, I mean Nicolas Pepe. I don't think, if Nicolas Pepe wasn't a popular person on social media and you see all those YouTube videos and whatnot, I don't think Arsenal would have signed him. Like Haller, if he wasn't doing so well at Frankfurt and getting all these plaudits by these German football hipsters in the UK from, I don't know, Guernsey or whatever, no one's going to give a shit about him. But, you know, he's a big name on social media, isn't he? They've got YouTube videos, they've got great Twitter profiles, etc, etc. So, you know, let's sign him because, hey, we'll boost our profile in Germany. I don't fucking know.
I think, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, because I think a while back on a podcast when I was last on with you, you said about Jarrod Bowen. And West Ham actually learnt their lesson with Haller at the beginning of the season. And they went out and got Bowen in the January transfer window. And again, he's kind of proven your theory right. There are players in the Championship who can do a very good and a very important job when they make the step up.
Yeah. I mean, he's just one of a few. I mean, Eze's going to be the next one. Where he goes, I don't know, but there's a few clubs after him. It's just about taking that chance and making them and allowing them to step up. You know, Brentford seem to be stumbling a bit now, and if they don't come up, there's going to probably be about 3 or 4 of their players in the Premier League next season too. So yeah. I think teams are starting to realise now. You know, Bowen being a good example, who I said from time should have been in the Premier League. West Ham are benefiting from that. And they also got Antonio from the Championship too, another one that could step up. That's so true. It's all about the recruitment and taking the chance on these teams in the lower league. Feed your own systems before you go into other countries and buy high. You know what I mean?
Yeah, even these foreign players that they buy, I mean, I also feel like they try and put them in systems that won't work. Like Haller played in a two. He's never played in a one. So now he's expecting to play up front by himself alongside, and Antonio. Antonio doesn't even, he's much better as a target man. So you can't, unless you play them together, it's not going to work. You know, unless you play Felipe Anderson on the left and actually tell him to create. He's very much an individual. You got to know who you're buying before you go and buy. The recruitment in the past couple of years have been awful compared to like the 2000s where you found players abroad and they came and actually made a big difference. And you had a couple of duds, not a load of duds.
So
it's just about better recruitment. But there are quite a lot of gems in the Championship that they can find. So they better start looking and looking properly.
Mm, there you go. All right, let's talk about Tottenham 1, Crystal Palace 1. To be fair, I don't think there is really much to discuss. Harry Kane scored again. Where would Spurs be without him, eh? And Geoffrey Schlupp equalised. But interestingly enough, and without making this the Jose Mourinho show, because I don't really want to do this, he said that he wants Tottenham to be where they belong. And by that, he means Spurs are probably, he said, third or fourth in the form table since lockdown. And that's where Spurs belong, third or fourth. Now, I'm probably going to upset a few Spurs fans, Tobes especially, but Tottenham are not one of the best four teams in the UK. I'm sorry, they're not. So for Jose to say that they should belong there, I don't know, maybe he's on that white stuff. I don't know. I'm just, you know, whatever. Milk.
Unless he's on a power play with Levy.
You reckon?
I mean, when you look at the Spurs squad at the minute, they haven't got fullbacks. I'm sorry, if anyone thinks Sergio Aurier is a fullback, just get out. he's a wing back with a license to just never come back in his own half once the ball's gone forward. And all they've got is Davis on the other side. And they've tried the Davinson Sanchez idea at right back, and that went horribly wrong. So they need to invest massively in their team. And you've said it yourself, Harry Kane, where would they be without him?
Yeah,
well, he's carrying that team to win, well, not win a trophy, but...
Let's be fair, they've
just got to find a striker as well that is willing to back up Harry Kane as well. They can't just keep on going through with one striker.
Yeah. Well, look, let's be fair. When he arrived, Spurs were 14th, and he's got them in a very good position, given the circumstances, given the sides like United, Wolves, Sheffield United, they've all done well. So, you know, I can't slate the guy for being very, what's the word, ambitious. But at the same time, and it goes back to what we said weeks and weeks and weeks ago, Spurs have got a lot of players that really need to be shown the door. Koja, I think that you guys touched on it on your podcast on Three Midfield. There are a lot of Spurs players that shouldn't be there. And I remember listening to, I think it was Darren, it was Tobes, Jack. And they were all saying, I mean, when you guys went through a list of Spurs' squad players, the majority of them had to go. So this isn't a small project, it's a big project. But again, going back to what Jose said, Spurs are not a top 3-4 team at this moment in time. I don't know where he gets this notion from. I don't know.
Maybe it's, I mean, I think because Pochettino did a good job there getting them to become Champions League regulars rather than, they had really one real proper title challenge. I don't really count the Leicester one. I think Leicester one are really just going to go with it from start to finish, to be honest. The Chelsea one really is the only one that they could, when Chelsea won the league, that's the entire race I thought they were really part of. But they've never been a certified top four club like that in Premier League history. That's if we're keeping their bucks. So, I don't agree that they deserve to be there. If you deserve to be there, you would have finished there this year. That's what it is. But if they're going to get back there, all the recruitment this summer has to be in one striker and all along the defence. Because they ain't going anywhere close to the top four with those guys at the back. Like, it's just, it's appalling. Mm-hmm. Lloris found form, good for him. He's a goalkeeper. He's probably got another couple of years of him because this is technically his prime for a goalkeeper. But Davies, Sanchez, Foyth, Aurier, Alderweireld, he's declining now, so I can't really clamour for him the way I used to. Like, they just need to improve at the back. Seriously, otherwise, this is going to be another season of complete chaos. And they give Dyer contracts. Honestly, it's a joke.
Kojo, 8 clean sheets in 38 league games this season. That says it all, doesn't it?
That's disgusting.
For you to just say that speaks volumes. Because you haven't gone off on a rant. And I know that you're serious when you don't go off on a rant. Not that you're not serious when you do, but I can tell the disdain in your voice.
Oh, you know what? I'm trying my best to keep it cool because usually Tobes is the one that just goes off on a rant.
It's not your team, so it ain't your problem.
yeah, literally.
KG, Crystal Palace, they need reinforcements, don't they? I've been saying this for a long time. When you've got one-trick ponies in your side, you're going to get sussed. It's an ageing squad. I don't think Roy Hodgson's going to be there for too long. In fact, I think I said it last week that Eddie Hype will probably get the Crystal Palace job if and when Roy Hodgson does leave, if or eventually leaves. But yeah, how much work needs to be done for them next season? Because I'll tell you this for now, if they don't bring any quality in, they're going to be in a relegation dogfight next year.
Yeah, Crystal Palace, for me, are the definition of happy to be there. As long as they're in the Premier League, they don't care what's going on. They've got Roy Hodgson, who plays like 6 DMs. They've still got trying to reel out Benteke and sometimes kind of Wickham when he's fit. These guys aren't serious about trying to do anything but survive in the Premier League. And that's all right if that's your remit, if that's what you're after. But it's going to come to an end because there's not always going to be 3 teams worse than Crystal Palace. And that's going to come to an end very soon. Yeah, I mean, there was a stat I saw today about them being the only team that has not scored more than 2 goals in a game, and they've survived. Jesus. And they've survived by 9 points too. Again, that shows you the quality that it's been this year in the league. It's just disgusting, man. I don't like anything about Crystal Palace when it comes to their football. Nothing at all. And this summer it's going to be worse. They need to set Zaha free. Let him go, man.
Lovely segue, Steve, because didn't you tell me before the show that something about Roy Hodgson said that Zaha doesn't want to play there anymore or something like that?
Yeah, so it's on, I found it on, I think it was the BBC website. Hodgson basically said Zaha is so set on leaving Palace. And do you know what? That might actually be a good thing for both parties. It gives Zaha that one last chance to prove himself that he can make it at a bigger club. Because obviously I think the Man U move was too much too soon for him. And I think from Palace, if they can cash in on him, if they invest wisely, and if they do change managers in the summer, they can actually give a chance to the manager to create a team in his vision. And, I mean, they've started to sign a few more younger players. They signed Nathan Ferguson from West Brom earlier this week. So it looks like they are starting to go with a youth policy. But the problem is, as we've already just said on here, they look happy to be in the Prem. And sometimes that's almost like the old Stoke approach under Tony Pulis. You just do enough to get by. No one really knows what you're doing. Whereas now it looks like they're going to have to make a gamble of, do we want to change our style? Is the grass really going to be green on the other side without Hodgson? Or do we stick with him for another year and risk relegation? Because if they go into the new season with the form they've been in now, they're going to be in the Championship before long.
Yeah. We see, the thing is, with Wolf Zaha, we've criticised him quite a bit, as Kojo knows. The thing is, you can't dispute his ambition. And by that, I mean he's pressed for moves for the past couple of seasons. He knows that he's probably in the twilight of his career and he needs a move to step up. He's not like another... other footballers at that squad who are happy to, you know, just be there for the sake of being there, you know, or just making decisions because they'd rather listen to relatives than their agents or people that actually give a shit about their football more than anything. But I'm not going to answer that. But so, yeah, I don't know. Kojo, do you think he'll get his move in the summer?
No. I think he's just destined to stay there, if I'm being honest. How many times are you going to be linking him with a move away? At this point, I think it's done for, man. Honestly, I think he better get settled where he is and just stay home, man. Mm-hmm. I think it's done there.
Well, the thing is, surely the emergence of Saka at Arsenal has destroyed any possible move there, because he was hotly tipped to join them last summer. But here comes this youngster who's, you know, very technically gifted, quick. He does exactly what Arteta wants him to do. He's versatile, can play left back, centre mid. What chance would Zaha getting in this first team?
I don't think that's the thing. I don't think he's a priority anymore because Saka, like you said, Saka's emerged. Emil Smith-Rose had a good loan at Huddersfield, and Arteta was asked about him, and he had this immediate smile on his face, give him a load of praise, and you can just tell that he has an idea for these younger players coming through. There's no need to invest in someone who, yes, he is in his prime years, but how much are you going to have to spend on this guy when you've got a load of young talent coming through? You've already spent a lot of money on Pepe, who he doesn't really even trust properly. I mean, it's not worth the risk for me, in my opinion. I don't know who else would be interested in buying him for the amount of money that his team would want. So, yeah, I think that ship has sailed, and I think he's going to end up retiring. It's off on him.
Can I just say, it's wild that still just sort of said that Zaha's in the twilight of his career at 28.
Well, listen, yeah, I know that sounds ridiculous. I know that sounds absolutely bloody ridiculous because he's not in his mid-30s. But when you think about where he could be or where he should be at this age, for me, it's only downhill for him. Me, personally, that's what I think. I mean, where can he go in the Premier League and better himself? Who would want to sign him? Let's be real. How much would his price be? How much do clubs need a player like him? Who? Do Spurs need the Zaha?
I'd say Newcastle. And hear me out with this, because everyone's going to go, what the fuck?
Well, listen, I said he was in the twilight of his career, so no one can beat that, really.
Well, no, because like when you think about it, when Chelsea first got their money, they bought nearly everyone they could in a fucking 100,000 mile radius, and they signed players They even signed Damien Duff at one point, who I thought did a very good job there, but he was nothing outstanding. He never really sort of, for me personally, he was a well-known name, he did a job, you know, and he kept things ticking over. I think Zaha could be that for Newcastle if they're going to get the Saudi money. Because they'll get him relatively cheaper compared to some of these big ambitious ideas. I mean, Newcastle fans have been, they've been linked with what, Coutinho? I'm trying to think of other players that are going to be out of their reach. Well, Zaha would actually be a slightly realistic target for him.
Fair point. All right. So we'll go with that then. Let's go with Zaha at 28 years old in the twilight of his career going to Newcastle. Okay. Great stuff. Wonderful. There's another slot that in with the, what was it I said, KG? Eddie Howe works his magic, yeah? Okay.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
Another stealth fuck up. Hey, oh, well. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Whatever. I've heard the worst. Right. Where shall we make our way now? Let's City 5 Norwich 0. I don't think anyone gives a shit. I mean, De Bruyne got me 32 points on my fantasy football. Does anyone give a shit about that result? I think we knew that was going to come.
I don't care about the result, but I just want to say, how disgraceful have Norwich been? When you really collect the season, minus 49 with 21 points. Thanks for coming. No. Oh my God. It is awful, awful stuff, man. And as we were saying earlier with somebody else, we were talking in the group chat about some Norwich players that could possibly go on and do better elsewhere. You know, it's usually when you've got like one or two star players in the team, you say they'll do better elsewhere. But people are literally naming like 7, 8 of the starting 11.
Mm.
And so they haven't worked together, but yet they'll probably work better elsewhere if they're that good.
Did anyone watch this game, by the way?
Sorry?
Did anyone actually watch this game or any highlights or whatever?
I mean, wasn't it basically the David Silva testimonial match? I love the fact that for all the hype, like Kevin De Bruyne, I think is a brilliant player, do not get me wrong, and he's now equaled Thierry Henry's assist record, but Henry did that and scored goals.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's just my little Arsenal fan getting that mention in.
Fair enough.
Still clinging on to the past.
Oh dear. Kojo.
Yo.
Do you think Daniel Farke will be at Norwich City next season?
Oh, God. You're asking that question when you do that.
Is it yeah or nine?
Alright, let me try and confirm the shit. I look at him the same way I look at David Wagner. He'll probably leave. Go to, I don't know, another league, maybe Germany. Failed there as well. He's a coach where he's one of those pretty football coaches, but when it comes to actually defending or coaching or coaching how to attack properly or whatever, it's non-existent. It's, you know, play pretty football, link up 1-2 here there, but is he effective really? Not I don't think so. I think the Championship last year, obviously, they did really well to get up. Pukki scored a lot of goals, but and with Buendia as well. But then this season, he didn't play Buendia a lot. Or in as many starts as you should have. I mean, if they have the link up and they make goals together, what the hell is he doing on the bench in the league? I mean, in the Premier League, he's stupid. So, you know, if he stays, personally, if I was Buendia, I would run as fast as I can. If I was Kant, well, actually, no, I don't really rate Kant well, so I don't really care. Pukki will probably leave, go finish his career back home in Finland. Probably a better move because he started off well and then Farker became Farker. So, yeah. Hey, Coach, you know, there's got a couple of young defenders in there, Aarons and Godfrey, right? And I liken them to Ryan Sessegnon when he came up with Fulham. Just looked lost. Like he was too much. He was too much. It was too soon for these guys. And I think it was the same for them too.
Mm.
I agree. But that's the problem. We're in a generation where because you've had so many young players recently come through and have such a huge impact. Now, if you're between the ages of 18 to 21 and you don't make the same impact, you're not as good anymore. You're this, that, and the other. These guys need time to develop. That's all they need. So if they do move, maybe, or hopefully it's to a club where they get not too much light shone on them because they could actually become good players, especially Aarons. I'm a fan of Aarons. I'm not too sure about Lewis. Godfrey's good, but they need to, if they're going to move, they need to make sure it's a sensible move, not a big move that suddenly puts them in more limelight.
Yeah, you go on.
No, I was going to say, we said it the other day that they've got a lot of talented youngsters there, but the spine of the team just was not good enough in terms of Premier League experience to guide the youngsters, because I think it was a lot of naivety in how Norwich played. And you said it, you just said it there. You know, they play a lot of pretty possession-based football, neat 1-2s, but there was no real clinical end product. Their defence looked, as a unit, looked so unorganised. And the way that you explained Farker, he's basically a German Eddie Howe. So, I've said it about Eddie Howe before. It's all pretty possession-based, but where's the end product? And where's the back-to-the-walls defending? It's nowhere to be seen. And that's why both these teams have been relegated. I'm all for substance and style, but at the end of the day, you have to collect points, and you can't be getting spanked left, right and centre every week like Norwich have, and without the manager getting any blame, going, oh, we've got a lot of youngsters. Well, you're the fucking manager. Speak to your chairman and go, I need a bit of experience, or I need this type of player in.
It's all right, Steve. I was going to say he's right, though. Steve is right at that point, because I haven't seen any flack towards Farker. Not one sentence either.
Do you think
it's really unusual because he's an honest
bloke, though, KG? Because he just tells it like it is. He doesn't beat around the bush with his players or, you know, in the press. He always gives the press what they want. He always tells them what they want to hear. And I think he's another one of those protected species. In fact, I think, to be fair, he'd be better off being, maybe, you know, we've got Graham Norton presenting the Eurovision. Maybe he can do it for Germany, presenting their Eurovision. He'd be a great presenter.
Not going there. So, what I'm going to say to you on that point is that he is honest, and that's correct. But as you saw, maybe 4 or 5 games ago, he already admitted defeat. I don't want to hear that from a manager, man.
Hang about. David Moyes, in his first game as Sunderland manager, said we're battling relegation in his first match when they lost to Man City.
To be fair to David Moyes at Sunderland, Sunderland are such a poison chalice. But they should have been relegated at the start of that season, long before that.
Sunderland are a poison chalice, man. They're fucking... Oh, man, they're Hiroshima, fuck's sake. I don't know. Right, Brighton beat Burnley 2-1. Nick Pope didn't get his clean sheet. Sorry, KG. But you reckon he'll be joining Chelsea in the summer?
Yeah, I do, man. I think, and I want to go back to this point, man. When I first made that point about Nick Pope being better than Kepa, and at the start, people were like, "What are you talking about, man? Kepa is Kepa, you know, 70 million Spanish or 80 million, whatever Spanish, all exotic." And now look how the tables turn. Don't doubt me when it comes to goalkeepers, man. I know my goalies, and Nick Pope will be an upgrade on Kepa. And I do think he'll go there because the price will be better. And I know Chelsea have been linked with Dean Henderson, but I don't see you guys selling him to Chelsea. That wouldn't make any sense for you. So, yeah, I see Nick Pope going there and Kepa going back to Spain or wherever, Italy or somewhere.
Well, I think you guys have got just signed a keeper permanently, haven't you? So
yeah, Melier, yeah, yeah.
But do you think there's a chance that, you know, Bielsa might want Pope?
I don't think we'd get Pope, and I think he's destined for the top six. So, and he deserves that, man. His players deserve that since he was first put in at Burnley. He's deserved a top six club. So that's all good. But what I'm saying is that Kepa, if we was linked with him, I'd be scared. I would rather have Melier in goal than him come to ours on loan or whatever. He just doesn't instill any confidence in me, and he never did from the start.
Yeah. Do you know what? I heard people comparing him to David De Gea when David De Gea first joined us, and I can kind of see that, but the difference is De Gea improved month on month when he joined us. All right, he dropped the clang in the Community Shield, and, you know, he was bullied left, right and centre, but yet he still was commanding. Commanding to a certain point. I'm not saying that he had that he was dominating his box, but you grew more and more confident in his ability as time progressed. And perhaps that's because he had an established back four in front of him. You know, Rio, he had Vidic, he had Evra. With Kepa, it's almost as if he's regressed month on month at Chelsea. And the more mistakes he makes, it gets worse for him. I don't know whether it's a confidence thing. I don't know whether it's because they've completely lost faith in him, because we're going to touch on it in a minute. But obviously he was dropped for today's game, which for me means that's his time up. But I don't think Bielsa would want someone like that. You need players with balls, man. Especially now that you've come up.
Yeah. Absolutely, man. I mean, we're being linked with every South American from here to everywhere, man. They all seem to be coming now. You know, Leeds, Premier League, Bielsa. We're just signing every South American player, but he just wouldn't fear. I think he needs to go back to Spain or somewhere like that. No. I just don't think that this is the league for him.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Let's talk about the relegation dogfights. Let's go. So, Aston Villa took the lead against West Ham through Jack Grealish, and then Yarmolenko, who I believe is a very, very underrated winger, pulled West Ham level. But Villa were... It was squeaky bum time for them, because they were waiting for the Bournemouth match to finish. They were waiting for the Watford game to finish. Arsenal was 3-0 up against Watford in the opening half. Absolutely battered them. Bournemouth got a very good victory at Everton, and Jordan Pickford was playing pump it up again, letting ball slip through his hands. Before we talk about the most monumental moment of the Premier League, not Liverpool winning the title, Eddie Howe getting relegated, Steve, as an Arsenal fan, you must be thrilled with that victory. It was pretty dominant. I know you let in two goals. Welbeck missed a good chance to pull it level, but let's be 100% honest, there was no way you're going to lose that game or even come away with a draw. You're going to beat them, weren't you?
Yeah, it was a little bit of nerves in the second half as Watford was starting to find a bit of confidence, but when you watched it, even the Arsenal players sort of had faith in, well, they had faith in Martinez more than anything else. I think he'd done fantastic today. Mm. I think Watford were desperately trying to get into the game. And do you know what? If they had started the game, how they played in the second half, I'd be a lot more worried. I think today was, we got the early lead, we took our foot off the gas, and as frustrating as it is to concede two goals, the fact that we didn't actually drop points, which I know has been a big issue for Arsenal of dropping points from winning positions, we're slowly starting to eradicate that now, which is going to set us in good stead for next season if we can continue the development that you're seeing as tactically. As for Watford, I mean, Troy Deeney's going to need those kahunas when he goes to Rotherham on a cold, wet Tuesday night.
You know, well, maybe cold cojones, you know, you never know. Ice balls. KG, Pearson got the boot. Now, we don't know why. Rumour has it he had an argument with a few of the players, or they, whatever reason it was. But it was a bit strange to get rid of him with two games to go, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it's nothing that the Watford board haven't done before. Yeah. So it's not really a shock. When I saw it, I wasn't surprised. Watford have done this so many times. Yeah, how do you have three permanent managers in the Premier League? You know, how do you even do that?
I think Swansea did it a few years ago, didn't they?
I think they did it a few years ago with
what's his name? Clement. They had the, what's his name, the American fella?
Oh, yeah, Bob Bradley.
Bob Bradley. And who started the season with him? I forget.
Was it Laudrup? Did Laudrup start it?
Pass. Oh no! Yeah. Wasn't it Carvalho?
Oh yeah, from Sheffield Wednesday. Yeah. But no, that it didn't surprise me. And where they go next, I have no idea. Because if you're a manager, you got a team that's gone down. The squad doesn't look all that great when you take out who is going to be leaving. But I don't see Decore playing in the Championship next season. You know who? What have they got? What have they got to work with? And how long have they got to work with it? That's the question for them.
No, this is it. And Kojo, as KG alluded to, they've got a few players that probably won't be there next season. You've got the likes of Tom Cleverley, Saar, who's a very good player. Doucouré is a good player. Even Will Hughes, decent player. But then you've got the likes of Danny Welbeck, who will be out of contract. Troy Deeney, who I'm not sure if he'll stay there, even though he's very loyal to Watford. And I don't know. What do you think the future holds for him, mate?
For Watford, honestly, I don't know. For those players that you've mentioned, I'm not sure. I'm still not sure about Will Hughes. I know he's tidy, but I've never seen this. Well, he's never been someone that's been screamed about, but people have told me that he's got huge, he's had potential. I knew he had a serious injury, but even before the injury, I was never really sold on him. But Sars looked tidy. He's still a bit rough. I have this feeling that he might end up at Liverpool somehow. Doucouré, I don't know where he will go. He'll probably go in terms of the Premier League anyway. He'll probably go abroad. I'm not sure about him. I think Deeney will probably stay. I know they asked him about whether he's staying or not. I think he'll stay. I think he's too loyal to the club, and he'll be determined to get them back into the Premier League at the first time of asking. But as for the club itself, I mean, with the KG said, how many times have they sacked managers out of nowhere, for whatever reason? Two games left to go, whether the season's going well, and then they'll sack the manager anyway. I mean, it's just a comical club with comical owners, whichever owner they have, whichever turn of the year. So, honestly, for my sanity, because, you know, as much as I am a United fan, I love football in general, I wouldn't like to see them in the Premier League for a while. But I think if this fast continues to happen at their club, they will be back for at least another 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. See, this is it. The way I see it is, at least with Norwich, they got a couple players that they could make big money off of. With Watford, I don't know, apart from Doucouré and maybe Sarr, who else can they sell for big wedge? And let's be real,
how much?
Deulofeu, I like him. I think he's a very good player, but
no.
I think he'll end up going back to Spain. Someone like Celta, who's just about stayed up, they might end up signing him. But apart from that, I don't know. And granted, Watford have got a very decent model, you know, because they've got the links with Udinese and all these other clubs and whatnot. So you're going to see a few players come in on loan and all that. But yeah, I don't know. I fear for them. I really fear for them, like I feel for Huddersfield.
Now, back to Coach's point about Will Hughes, he was a good prospect when he first broke through at Derby. And he didn't move at the right time, man. He should have moved earlier than he did, and not to a team like Watford. So he's probably stifled himself, in all honesty, there. Because he did look tidy in the early years in the Championship. But right now, he's just another, what I call just another midfielder. Put him in that Harry Winks mould of just, they're just playing central midfield and don't do nothing.
Okay. So what about TC, you know, then? TC, no, what about Tom Cleverley? Come on now.
I'm going to say, there was a player that I used to describe like this. It used to be the Jermaine Genius effect.
There it is. I was going to say, but I wasn't going to be disrespectful. He's just a midfielder.
Yeah, he just keeps things ticking over. You wouldn't know if he was in that game or not, but his stats would look average. So he wouldn't do enough to sort of go, oh, these are bad stats, or oh, he's done amazing. It's just enough to just keep ticking over and earning the wage. He does nothing to control games. And I think Will Hughes is of the same effect, especially in the Premier League. Throwing back in the Championship, he might do a bit more for Watford, but I think top of the Championship, relegation battle, Premier League team, that's his standard.
Okay, but let's talk about the side that stayed up then, Aston Villa. It's been a topsy-turvy season for them, and I'm pretty sure that if you'd have told them at the beginning of the season that you'd survive on the final day after having such a terrible run of form, they'd have snapped your hand off, snapped your feet off, snapped anything off, really. Kojo, I know West Ham rode their luck today. They got a bit of a sloppy equaliser, big deflection there. But yeah, it's a big, big result for Aston Villa. And I think on the balance of play and the way that their season has panned out, I think they deserved it. Granted, they got very lucky with that Sheffield United incident. But I think overall they deserved it.
Yeah, they definitely do deserve it. Well, Jack Grealish more than anyone, really. I mean, the guy is just so influential for that club. And, you know, he stepped up. You're talking about where your key man step up on the, I guess, the big occasion. And boy, did he do it. Over the course of the season, I think, especially getting a big result against Arsenal, so huge for them. They deserve it, man. They deserve it. And more power to them. Because we've had the other two clubs that have been relegated, they've been here for a while. And one thing I don't like are clubs that are sort of comfortable where they are. They don't look like they want to push on. And I feel like with Villa, they have sort of the idea that they wouldn't want to be in this sort of position again. They want to now try and push on and become a certified Premier League club again, you know, rather than a club that's just happy to be where they are, like a Palace or something. So, you know, more power to them, man. And I think they really do deserve to stay in the league. And more power to Grealish as well, because, man, the guy's really stepped up. He has really, really stepped up as a captain, as a leader of that club. He deserves it. And if he does move, they can't begrudge him. They can't be mad at him, because he's done exactly what he's been asked to do. So, yep. Yeah, shout out Villa. And shout out the manager as well. Good manager.
There you go. KJ, I know there's no love lost between Leeds and Aston Villa, given what happened last season at Elland Road. But, you know, you're talking about a club that ended a three-game losing streak going into their game against Crystal Palace, which they won. They drew at Everton, and then they beat Arsenal. And let's be 100% honest, I think maybe a week and a half ago, we were saying, you know, that's probably it for Aston Villa. You know, but, you know, they've dug themselves out of it, and you've got to credit Dean Smith, you've got to credit a lot of the players. And I think they've done remarkably well, given the circumstances, no?
You've got to give them credit. They finished with 35 points, great total.
Mm.
But they also had the luck of the draw with the teams they played. You know, Palace have been on the beach for a while. Arsenal, you know, they just finished two amazing games against Man City and Liverpool. Everton are just Everton. You know, so they got the luck of the draw and used it to their advantage at that time, and it's helped them stay up. So yeah, can't begrudge them. And I agree with Coach as well. I don't think Villa are a Palace type of team. You know, they were a staple in the Premier League for years, man, and I think they'll want to get back to that level.
Yeah, well, I don't think Crystal Palace would spend £118 million in the summer like Villa did. But hey,
yeah, but they also need to look at that, because they spent large amounts of that on rubbish. You know, 20 million on Matt Target. Come on now. You know, they have to recruit.
Sorry, 20 million on Matt Target?
Yeah.
From Southampton, as in barely looked a Premier League player, and they spent 20 million.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
Right, and me, I must be worth about five on one leg.
Wait, they spent 20 million on Matt Target?
Yeah. I'm sure it was 20 million, man. You know what? Because you guys don't know this, and it's gone under radar, I'm going to just Google this now. But I'm sure it was $20 million deal.
I mean, I've just Googled it. It says undisclosed, which I'd hide the fucking price if I were them as well. I will say this, though. Fair play to Dean Smith, because in the last few games, I know you're saying they had an easy run in, but he actually took a bold move and went a lot more attacking with the formation.
Mm.
He was playing like a 4-5-1, and then for the last few, he kind of went 4-3-3 and actually gave the wide players, where he ended up playing Grealish as almost like a left forward, as a wide forward, that chance to roam, and it meant the defence had to stay back a bit more. Mm. But El Mohammadi, until he got his injury, again, his crosses were lethal from deep, and that's always been a trademark of his, with his delivery. So you can tell that the manager actually put a lot of time into the tactics and was bold enough to change him for the last few games. And credit to him, it's reaped rewards for him.
Yeah.
But as I say, they need to get rid of Dross.
And to be fair, they lost Tom Heaton through injury. And it was a massive loss for him. Absolutely massive.
Even John McGinn in the midfield, like, he was a big loss for him for the most part of the season, because he was the engine room in the midfield. Mm. So whilst you had Grealish doing the attacking role, you had Douglas Luiz, who I think has been very underrated at the club. And you can see why Man City bought him in the first place. He gets a lot of plaudits from the Villa fans, and I don't think he gets the same appreciation from the press, because, well, he's not Jack Grealish. But if he decided not to wear shin pads and roll his socks down, he might get a bit more recognition.
Mm.
And a shit haircut.
Sorry, Matt Target was 14 million rising to 17, so close enough, man.
Well, if they stay up, they probably get All right, on to the next one. Everton 1, Bournemouth 3. Bournemouth turned up again. Wow. Funny that they didn't turn up for most of the season, and when it mattered, they bothered turning up. But then, unfortunately, results didn't go their way, and Eddie Howe is down. Absolutely delicious. And, you know, Rod was winding me up all week saying, "Oh, Eddie Howe's the Messiah," because I know he was trying to get a bite. So, you know, today I found a little song, and when I found out the result that Bournemouth won, but they still went down. All I heard was, can you handle this? Can you handle this? He did not like it because he ignored me. So, yeah, I'll get him on Wednesday. Don't worry, I'll get him on Wednesday. So, where do I begin with this? Okay, look, without taking the piss too much, Bournemouth got it's a very good result winning at Everton. It's a very difficult place to go to. A lot of teams have struggled there. But at the same time, you know, you can't just turn up with four or five games to go like Bournemouth are doing. And as far as I'm concerned, they got exactly what they deserved. But before we talk about Bournemouth here, can we just, again, discuss Jordan Pickford, please?
Please.
Can we talk about this guy? Because I'm not going to play that song again. Because then I'm going to start singing it. I'm going to be singing it for the rest of the week because it sticks in my head, that song. And I'm not going to get into it. But, Steve, when you have a goalkeeper like this who he had a good World Cup, let's be fair. He did have a good World Cup. But he's another one who has just totally gone downhill. And I don't know whether it's because he's got too big for his boots or whether he's become too complacent. Fuck knows what it is. But this goalkeeper is a laughing stock.
I swear it's an England curse. Like, you get called up to the England team, you go between the sticks and you start shouting a lot and banging your chest. And every bloke who drinks Stella in the pub's going, that's what we want, that's you need our goalkeeper. Because that's why everyone loved fucking Joe Hart for so long, despite he clearly was not an elite goalkeeper. Don't get me wrong, Hart was a very good keeper, but he was nowhere near the same levels that everyone was banging on about. And Pickford's the same. Pickford got that sort of ride of momentum, got a big money move to Everton. Fuck knows why they paid £35 million now in hindsight. And he's dropping clangers left, right and centre. We're talking about Pope looking for Chelsea in that. Everton want to be flogging Pickford. I mean, at this moment in time, Kepa's not looking a bad option for Everton.
Come on.
Anything that goes in the air above fucking waist level, Pickford's going to, like, spill it into his net somehow. he's actually finding new ways of creating calamities every week when a shot's on target. I feel sorry for the Everton defence because they're there going, fuck me, if the ball goes past me, it's in, irrespective. Because even if it's going wide, Pickford at this moment in time, he'll probably claw it into his own net. He's one game away from doing that. It's absolutely... And I always want to have a go at Ancelotti. Like, just drop him for a few games. The lad's clearly, like, shot to shit with form and confidence. And he keeps making mistakes. And you keep sending him out there.
Yeah, but mate, they've got Steckelenberg as their number two, for crying out loud. Come on.
Fuck it. Put Leighton Baines in goal. He'd probably do a better job. Be a nice little send-off for him.
No, but hey, you know what doesn't help Pickford is that when Gareth Southgate comes out with saying it's like he's still my number one, that don't help. Because that's just basically saying keep doing what you're doing. No, don't worry about it. Or because he played well against Tunisia. You know, the guy didn't even play well against any of the big teams, man. The group was full of jobbers, man. It was terrible. And he's living off credit from that World Cup. Well, to carry on, because this is what England do. They don't let go of the people that they love so much, and they just keep picking them, and then they wonder why they're not successful.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Very, very, very true. Cannot agree more, mate. Okay. Right. Moise Kean. Scored his first goal in God knows how long. Coach, does this lad have a future at the club?
Yeah, I think under Ancelotti will find something to do with him. I think when he joined the club, the guy had no level of English whatsoever. It looked like he was very unsettled. I think he was still quite rattled from the way he left Juventus. I don't think he ever expected to just leave the club like that. And he's come to a club where I think he hardly ever knows Everton. All that, so... You know, he just came to a Premier League club. I think he's going to settle slowly. I think Ancelotti coming in is a big help. End of the day, his goal scoring record has really improved, but it'll take time. It'll take time. The guy's still young as well, so I have a bit of patience for him to find his way. I think he'll be okay. Also, just a quick word on Jordan Pickford because I forgot to pipe up. remember against Liverpool? When the ball was going over the bar, and this guy decided to, you know, essentially assist Divock Origi and start the Origi saves Liverpool trend. from that day, I try to be patient with goalkeepers. From that day, that's when I said, this guy's done for. And you know what? Shout out KG, because this guy told me about Nick Pope a long time ago and I didn't want to listen at first. That's the real number one. Just going to put it out there right now.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
You're welcome.
One more thing before we discuss Bournemouth. What about Leighton Baines? Because I think this might be his last game for Everton. I think he's been a fantastic servant to the club. Very reliable.
He retired today.
He retired, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I did not know. Okay. Oh, interesting. Okay. So, what's the lowdown on this guy? Because a lot of people were going to say that Ashley Cole was the best Premier League left-back ever, which I can't disagree with. But Baines has to be up there, surely.
Yep. He walked so Trent could run. Essentially, free kicks, did it. Corners, did it. Long range shots, did it. The guy was actually doing it, just not obviously not the numbers that Trent's doing, but Trent plays a better place, so he gets to, you know, play in a better team and produce more numbers. But fact is, Baines was doing these things for a long time, and he's been doing it for a long time. He's quality, man, and he's been a great Premier League left back, and he'll probably go down definitely top 10. I'm not talking about top 5, because you got your Irwins, your Coles, your Everers, anyone else I'm thinking, Ian Hart. It's enough for one.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's quality there, but he's definitely in my top 10. The guy was an excellent man. Honestly, an excellent, excellent, excellent player. So, yeah, fair play to him.
Okay. Right, let's talk about the cherries, the little cherry tree that's been cut down to size. Okay, now let's get this right. They started the season with only 3 losses in their first 11 games, right? Then they lost 19 out of their next 25 games. Now, to be fair to Eddie Howe, he put his players on blast today. He basically said stuff like, you know, we can't just turn up late on in the season. It makes you question where we were or where these players were throughout the season. And he just put it on them. KG, what's next for this club? First of all, tell me about their season as a whole. What did you make of it? Did you see them going down at the beginning of the season? Did you anticipate them doing well? Or, yeah, did you just expect what happened, basically?
Yeah, I thought Bournemouth would have just been in that Palace spot. You know, not spectacular, not great, just doing enough to survive again. I thought they'd been all right, but losing Ryan Fraser, and even when he was playing, you could see that he was still dejected by not getting that move to Arsenal. And it took a lot out of him. You're talking, these aren't big numbers, but to a team down the bottom, they're huge numbers. He got like 14 assists the season before. That's huge. Josh King, Callum Wilson, they haven't been up to par. What, King got his 6th goal of the season today? I mean, what are you going to do with that? But this is also on Eddie Howe, because as I said to you in a chat still, I was glad you called the guy last week out on Eddie Howe being a good man manager, because we recently heard 3 people with their mouths come out and say, he hasn't been a good man manager for me. And he's still relying on people like Steve Cook, Simon Francis. And these players truly have no business being in the Premier League. And he just keeps on going back to them. He's bought Mepham in. And I don't know how much football Mepham was getting. But it wasn't a much. And also with the players that he buys, he's bought awfully. And it has to be said, Jordan Ibe's terrible. Solanke's been terrible. He got thingy from Billing as well from Huddersfield. Yeah. I mean, this isn't just on the team; it's on Eddie Howe himself too. Yeah. So all these people that keep saying about Eddie Howe and doing this and that, just take into account that he had Jermaine Defoe on his books, but didn't really use him and didn't even communicate with him.
He had Begovic, that is crazy. As well. He had Begovic, who at one point was challenging Petr Cech, or was it Courtois? Yeah. One of the two was challenging for the number one spot at Chelsea. I can't remember which one of the two it was.
Yeah. And but this is the point that I think that Jermaine Defoe made, that he doesn't really do well with big characters. So it's easy for him to put in that Ramsdale kid, because Ramsdale's just going to say yes, sir, no, sir. But you got someone like Begovic who's got pedigree. You got Defoe who's got pedigree. He doesn't seem to be able to cope with those type of characters. So this is on him too. He hasn't improved that team at all.
Yeah. Well, this is it. I'm going to quote what he said there, Steve, right? He says, we were excellent today. The frustrating thing when you see us play like that and you wonder where it was throughout the season. Over a 38-game period, we haven't been good enough. I'm not going to sit here and complain about how the team's got their points. When you see how we played today, that is a side that should have got more than 38 points. And this reminds me of when Fergie was playing these mind games with, I think, was it Howard Wilkinson? I can't remember which manager it was. He was saying, look, they turn up for against United, but they're cheating their manager for the other 36 games in the season. Do you think Eddie Howe is starting to feel that perhaps his players have actually let him down? Because let's be real, this is a guy that's come out week on week, defended his players, you know, blamed injuries, hasn't really stuck it on them. But here we go. Now that they're down, it's all coming out now, isn't it?
I mean, it... Everyone talks about Eddie Howe, like, and in the press he's kind of like this nice guy and he defends his players. Well, I'm sorry, being nice ain't going to win you games. And ultimately, the buck stops with you. So if you have to be an arsehole of a manager to just get yourself through the season and to win and grind out those points, then do it. Be confrontational. Some players will actually have more respect for a manager that calls them out on bullshit than the one that tiptoes around it. And if Jermaine Defoe's coming out and saying that he couldn't handle egos or he didn't like confrontation, he basically wanted an easy ride there. Mm-hmm. And fair play to Howe. He's a young lad, local lad, done good. You know, he played the majority of his career at Bournemouth, started his managerial career there. I know he went to Burnley, it didn't quite work out, and I think one of the reasons was homesickness and not being away from family and whatnot. But just because you're a local lad or just because you're sort of fawned upon by the club for what you've done in the past, you can't hold on to that. And using an extreme example, Arsene Wenger, for all the things that he'd done at Arsenal, towards the end of his career, was him being sacked the right decision? Ultimately, yes. Because he wasn't producing what was required of him. And the same should be said for Eddie Howe. So to come out and blame the players now, I think is actually a very weak move from a person. Why defend them all season when they're letting you down and then call them out like, oh, it's not right. Like, why didn't they do it for the rest of the season? You're the fucking manager. You make the decisions. Don't put it on them.
Yeah, because I think he realises his stock has gone down now, mate. I think his stock has gone down. In the past, people have been saying, yeah, but look at the resources that he's got available, even though they spent money. Look at the size of the club. Look at this. There's only so much you can hide behind. It's like with, you know, players like Chris Smalling and all these other United players. They're hiding behind the Paul Pogba thing with Jose Mourinho. They're hiding. But then that's what Howe's been doing. He's been hiding behind circumstances. And there's something that, KG, you alluded to, and, you know, you and I were talking before on WhatsApp. You're saying, you know, these narratives that you're hearing from the pundits about how, you know, they hope that he's going to stay there next season and they're lucky to have him, etc., etc. It's the same shit we've heard about Harry Redknapp, about Alan Pardew, about Sam Allardyce. It's almost as if Eddie Howe is like the next in line in the membership. You know, you've got like golf clubs and you've got these golf memberships and you're like a waiting list. Like, it's like Eddie Howe's on the waiting list for the old boys club. Do you get what I'm saying? He's being groomed to be part of this old boys club.
Yeah, like he's going to be on that next managerial go around. It's not going to work in places, yeah. He'll always have an excuse in the tub. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Kojo, I know you're itching. Come on.
Stick your I just find it cheeky from him, man. Me personally, yeah. But I don't care. He's gone. You know what I mean? He's gone. He's down. You know, I'm going to find that Booker T reference. I'm going to post it on my Twitter. no, honestly, no, you can't. If it's not just one player, if it's certain players saying that your man management is poor, and I also think it's another thing with these foreign players that he's had as well. Not only the players that he's bought, like Ibe and Solanke, and sort of like Solanke's only now just found his feet, we're keeping it honest. All these guys that he's brought in, he hasn't really helped them settle, he hasn't really helped them develop. If your management is that poor with players that are from this country that can, you know, that have pedigree and can actually play your system that you are, like you asked for to a T and all that, then when it comes to all these foreign talents, I doubt that he's actually got the man management to look after these guys and help them settle and play football. The only person I can think of that's done well is Lerma. Everyone else, not so much. So it is on him. I'll let you get on the players next, but it's on him. And if he's going to be part of that old boys club, he better do it somewhere else, because I don't want to see him, to be honest. But, you know, we'll probably see him next year when he's going to get sacked next year.
Kojo, do you remember the ministry angle back in the day when they were looking for the chosen one, and it was Vince McMahon. You know, he came out as a druid, and then they took the mask off, and it was Vince. Can you imagine?
It's been long, so I did.
Can you imagine, right? If the Saudis take over Newcastle and they announce their new manager, and it's Eddie Howe that just turns up in the press conference. Oh, my no. God.
Oh, no.
People are going to destroy me on social media. Eddie Howe has £500 million to spend. He's going to bring in Kylian Mbappe.
you would not want to have me on that podcast, trust me.
Oh, mate.
I'm sorry, I'm going to harp on something here. How shit must Bournemouth's training be if they're always got players injured?
Oh, you've got to be S&C coaches, mate.
But you see it in the past, though. Like, Tyrone Mings done his ACL. I think, I'm trying to look at other players that have, like, had serious injury. Quite a few of the players have had serious knee injuries at their training. And if David it's anything... If it's anything ACL-related in particular... Then that means a lot of the training isn't sort of conditioned for match intensity, because obviously they're doing it in games where they're not conditioned and not fit enough. So what the hell has been going? Has he been letting them ride it too easy? So they go lose a game on a Saturday. He's too shy to give them a bollocking, and then they do a light gentle session on a Monday, a little bit of a kick around, and he's quietly watching them going, oh, I don't know who I can pick next. Fucking speak up and do something. Sorry, this has been like 38 games worth of me like holding back because he'd still have a chance of being a Premiership manager. And he's a nice guy. He ticks the boxes in the media, you know, that he's polite, friendly, British, blue-eyed, Aryan looking, because they just seem to fucking love him no matter what he does. But he's managed to eclipse any form of criticism until now. And they're saying he'll be lucky if they keep hold of him. Why? He got them fucking relegated. And they'll realise this 12 games into next season when they're 16th, they've had a poor start, and then they'll be like, oh, it's hard adjusting to the Championship, there's a lot of good teams in here.
I'm saying he ain't going to be there next season. He's not going to be there next season. He's going to get a Premier League job, I'm telling you, like a Newcastle or a Palace. I'm telling you, he's going to come back to haunt us.
Anyway. And if he does it in the fucking Ministry of Darkness, I think I'll be at that press conference. I'll shave my head beforehand, and I will stone cold stunner him. I will smash glass beforehand when it gets announced.
Fucking hell! All right, let's move on because we're losing people with wrestling references now. Fuck it! Right, top four has been determined. Chelsea beat Wolverhampton Wanderers 2-0, but Man United's 2-0 victory at Leicester means United end up third. And would you believe it? ESPN were saying that United were relegation contenders at the beginning of the season. Yeah, life comes at you fast,
Sorry, what?
Yeah, ESPN, after the first few weeks of the season, when United were languishing in the bottom half of the table, they put United as relegation candidates. I will WhatsApp you the image as well. I'll be more than happy to do that, my friend.
Yeah.
It's true.
Are these the men that we're seeing?
Like Kurt Angle said, it's true. It's damn true. Yeah, I've just sent it to you. Have a look. Relegation race. They put Sheffield United, Norwich, Newcastle, Southampton, Watford, Villa, Everton, Bournemouth, Brighton, and Manchester United. There you go.
So half the Prem.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. Yeah. Yeah. There you go. But they put United in there. They put United in there in the relegation race. Yeah. There you go.
So these are the guys that people pay hard-earned money to watch on TV to say this.
ESPN, America. So, yeah.
America, UK, all of it, brother. It's stupidity. I'm not even going to go on a rant.
But then again, there was that old fella. I think it was he on CBS or NBC? I can't remember. He was wearing that orange tuxedo that you saw in Dumb and Dumber. And he was saying that Atalanta are in really bad form and they'll struggle in the Champions League. You're like, Atalanta are like unbeaten in like 15 games or something like that. Yeah. Do your Googles. Anyway, let's talk about United first. Kojo. Controversial penalty, apparently. Even though
controversial.
Apparently, you know, Tony Marshall was drilled by both the central defenders. But hey, it's controversial because it was a penalty. Bruno Fernandes gave United the lead. Okay, the first half, United were a bit slippery. It wasn't a great first half, but they stepped up a gear, went a goal up, and Leicester just had no ideas after that. It was just literally half chances. Vardy was feeding off scraps. Then Johnny Evans got sent off for an absolutely clumsy challenge on McTominay. And then Jesse Lingard came off the bench to score a truly bizarre goal. But you know what? If that's the last goal he scores in a United shirt, then fair play to you, Jesse. But yeah, top four is complete. I'm not celebrating it like it's a trophy, and like certain fans. Sorry, Steve. But, you know, it's progress. It's progress.
I celebrate football right now. It's that bad.
Come on, you've had that trophy for so many years. You know, come on.
I know. Anyway. Is this where you begrudgingly accept that Ollie's done a good job now?
Go on, say it, man. Say it. Go on.
Go on. And timestamp it so everyone knows where to go to on this podcast to hear it.
Go on, then. I want to hear you.
I want to hear you say it.
Anyway. Kojo, come on. Mm. Your evaluation of this game.
Yeah.
So enthusiastic. Fucking hell. No, I've already done a podcast teams. About this tonight. I can't be fucking asked to do it again.
Now, Man United and Leicester looked both like just really nervous in the first half. I think both teams were, they wanted to go for it, but they were a bit tedious with the ball. The only person that was really going for it in the Leicester squad, in my opinion, was Vardy. Maybe that's more for his golden boot, but at the end of the day, I think they want to get back into the Champions League, and you know, he's 33 years old. He hasn't got much left in at the top level, so you know, he definitely wanted to, you know, get back into the big European competition again, but I'm just satisfied with the fact that we're back in the Champions League. At the end of the day, it wasn't the best performance. Bruno looks knackered, absolutely knackered. At some point, he couldn't even sprint, but he always contributes somehow, got a penalty. Lingard, well done for chasing down, getting the goal. And credit to Ole, man, because at the end of the day, look, he hasn't been the best season. If I'm going to keep it real, the points ain't fantastic, but we are still back in Champions League. We are third somehow. So credit to him. And hopefully the club continues to back him. The game wasn't great, but we got the job done. And that's what we can ask for at the end of the day. I don't care if we play good or bad. I only care if we get 3 points. And we got 3 points. So I'm happy.
Okay. Brilliant. Lovely. I think that's all we're going to say on United, because I don't want people to say, it's a Man United show. KG, let's talk about Leicester City. Now, I'm going to end my little gripe on Eddie Howe, and I'm going to start it on Brendan Rodgers, another head coach who, for some reason, for whatever reason, is getting lots of plaudits. He had a lovely time at Reading. He was great with Chelsea's reserves. He was lovely at Swansea City. He went to Celtic for career rehab after failing at Liverpool, and now he's back at Leicester City. And for a certain period of time, people were saying, ooh, Leicester City are going to be a Champions League team. Brendan Rodgers has revolutionised Leicester City with such expansive, beautiful football. Well, if Brendan Rodgers is such a fucking genius, tell me why he's been reliant on Jamie Vardy's goals. Tell me why the likes of Tielemans went off the boil. I know they've had injuries, and I know it's the same rhetoric we're going to hear. Oh, they don't have a big squad. Well, I'm sorry. He's supposed to be a tactical genius, is he not? And now I'm hearing it's a credible finish for him. Bullshit. Utter fucking bullshit.
Well, no. Listen, Leicester, from all my predictions this year, they're the ones that have let me down, man. Because I was adamant they were going to finish top four.
Boo. But, boo you. Yeah,
well, look. Losing Ricardo was huge, right? You take out one of the best right-backs in the league easily as well, then it's going to affect your team, because that James Justin isn't ready for this level. He came from Luton, and you can tell he came from Luton. They also, you're right in as well, in the squad depth. That was a big issue, and they should have addressed that in January. Again, they haven't done that. And their backup striker, Tavardi, Iheanacho, too hit and miss, man. You know, they needed to recruit better, and that is their downfall in the end. Tielemans, you could say he's tailed off, but there's no one in there to take his place and give him a rest for a couple of games, again, down to recruitment. But yeah, man, no, they fell off, man, and there's no excusing for it. You can say about Vardy, relying on him, man, he's the golden boot winner, so he's the best, at this moment in time, he's the top goal scorer in this league, so you can rely on somebody like that. But he didn't have the supporting cast, and when Maddison went out, it was pretty much game over once he was injured.
So you're going with the Eddie Howe excuse of injuries hampered.
No. But I'm also going with their lack of investment, because Wes Morgan shouldn't be playing as much as he is now. Johnny Evans shouldn't be playing as much as he is now. There's recruitment issues there. They're going to have to do better in the summer to try and. I don't think they're going to get the top four next season. I think the teams that have been bad this year will improve over the summer. I have to believe that. Because I refuse to believe that the Premier League is going to be this poor again. So this was their chance. And they blew it, man. They blew it.
Yeah. Albrighton, Damari Gray, Chowdhury, Pratt, Barnes, Iose Perez, Ian Acho.
I want to say about Harvey Barnes. He's got away with a lot of stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. Because he's been missing chances at the wazoo. Like, he's missed so many chances that Vardy's put on a plate for him. It doesn't even hit the target. But again, he's another one of these that there's no criticism there. But yet Paul Pogba today has been called a bad apple. But you know what I mean? That's what I'm saying. No, there's players like him that have really underperformed. And also, obviously, showing that they're not quite ready for a full-time gig at that level. And I mean at the level of trying to get a Champions League place.
One minute, who called Paul Pogba a bad apple?
God, who is it? Phil Thompson.
Phil fucking Thompson. Big nose bastard. Well, Phil Thompson. What's he got to do with anything?
Yeah.
Let me tell you something, yeah? I'm going to tell you this straight. Right, let me tell you something, right? Paul Pogba, okay, he hasn't been an outstanding player for United since joining, okay? You can probably count the amount of great games he's had on two hands, right? But, okay, he has come under such intense criticism, and okay, he fucked up against West Ham, I get it, right? But let's be 100% honest, since he's been back from his injury, I think he's been absolutely brilliant. And to be playing this quarterback role, whatever you want to fucking call it, that's not his position, and I think he's done remarkably well. But anyway, Phil Thompson, who gives a fuck about Phil Thompson anyway? What was the last thing he ever did? What, he was a Julio's assistant, he cleaned his boots a few times, so what?
No, but that's what I'm saying about it. So, you know, Pogba, yeah, I said to you, I hope he leaves and just gets away from these. I don't want him to go nowhere, man. I want him to keep on doing what he's doing, because people keep on saying he's playing poor, but statistically, he's still one of Man United's best players. You can't disprove that either. And when he's on the pitch, he's a big influence. But you always hear it, man. Every time he loses that ball, you hear it. You know what I'm saying? Every time he misplaced pass, oh, lost there by Pogba. Yeah. They can't wait to jump on it, man. It's disgusting.
Yeah.
It really is. Yeah.
Anyway, let's carry on. Where were we? We've done Leicester City. We've done United. Shall we talk about Chelsea briefly? We mentioned Kepa earlier on. I think that's it for him. He was dropped for the game against Wolverhampton Wanderers. Chelsea sealed fourth place. And yeah, they're in the qualifiers for the Champions League. Mason Mount scored a lovely free kick, giving them the lead. Now, I'm going to come under quite a bit of criticism for this, but I don't get it. What's so good about Mason Mount? Can anyone tell me?
Thank you. I alluded to it the other week. He just has this bag of energy, and he didn't have an end product, and he's starting to get a bit of an end product in the last few weeks. Don't get me wrong, the free kick, what you've seen today, was very good. But the goal last week was a fucking pass to De Gea, for De Gea to tap in. He just looks like... I think quite a lot of modern midfielders now just have this energy about them, and that's all teams want. Like when you look at the Liverpool midfield, majority of them are just workhorses, and that's what Mount is. Has he got an excellent range of passing? Is he an excellent finisher? Is he an excellent crosser? Is he an excellent tackler? Does he excel in anything? Does he control games in the midfield?
No.
And I'll go one further, and I said this the other week as well on Twitter, and so I think you might have seen this. Hudson-Odoi, I think Chelsea have made a massive mistake giving him that big contract, especially after his Achilles injury, because seeing him throughout this season, whenever he's played, he looks like he can't get out of second gear. He just doesn't look like he's going to fulfil this potential. And Frank Lampard's going to come under a very big issue next year with some of the signings that Chelsea have got, and he's going to have to get rid of a few players. And I'll tell you what, Hudson-Odoi, I know he's been given the big contract. I'd be a little bit worried if I was him.
Yeah, I'm going to shoot Hudson-Odoi some bail though, man, because I think that he's in that bracket now. He needs to make sure he does everything right, otherwise he's not going to get played. So yeah, he's not allowed no wiggle room for a poor game. So no, he's second-guessing himself a lot.
Yeah, and he almost plays within himself now, because you see it, like yeah. I say, he doesn't get out of second gear because he just wants to keep things ticking over. But unfortunately, what Lampard needs to see in players now is players that actually do something above and beyond, because he's got Billy Gilmore, who is ready and waiting to absolutely boss that centre midfield. I reckon Jorginho and Kante will both be off in the summer, but then that still leaves him with Barkley, Loftus-Cheek, Kovacic, Mount, Pulisic, if he plays centrally, and Gilmore. So there ain't going to be enough spaces, especially if he plays this 4-2-3-1 formation.
I mean, look at all those names you just mentioned, but really well done to Lampard for securing a top four finish, man. I mean, what a job.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Amazing.
Given the lack of resources at the beginning of the season, the transfer embargo, the start to the season, I think he's done very, very well. But I'm interested to see how much pressure he'll be under next season, given the signings that they've already made.
Now, wait a minute, still, do you think I was being serious there?
Yeah, I
do. Oh, damn.
The thing is,
You don't think he's done well to get in top four?
I think he's done what any other manager could have done with the Chelsea team. I don't think it's anything spectacular, no.
Really?
Not one bit. And I replied to somebody today with that, because they said around the same thing about what a magnificent job he's done. And I said, how can you even say that? He's got a Chelsea team. He hasn't taken over Watford. He's got a Chelsea team who are under a transfer ban, but still managed to get Pulisic in because it was already pre-arranged or whatever. He's not started from the bottom here. He's gone to an established top six Premier League team.
I don't know, man. I don't know. Listen, we've spoken about how bad the goalkeeper is. Zouma and Rudiger aren't great. Christensen is a disaster, right? They're, you know, Alonso at left back, I think he's iffy. They got, you know, Reece James at right back. He's got so much potential, but is potential enough these days? So if you're looking at that Chelsea squad, which players do you think really, really stand out if you say, yeah, they are genuine match winners? Okay, let me rephrase that. At the beginning of the season, when you looked at Chelsea squad, did you think, they've got a few really, really good hit players here that can win you big games?
But no, but Chelsea have never been... They've had their individuals that have been there, but they've always been known as a good collective, as a team. And that still hasn't changed this season, even with the youngsters that he brought in. But you can see already, they've already made moves to replace these guys. You're not going to spend that money on someone like Werner and he's going to play second fiddle to Abraham.
Do you know what? Even with Abraham, this is one thing I will credit Lampard for, because Lampard seemed to put all these eggs in the Abraham basket at the beginning of the season. And Abraham was scoring goals, he was getting applauded. But when he started to really struggle, it took a hell of a lot for Frank Lampard to go, actually, I'm going to have to play Olivier Giroud. Because Giroud was close to leaving in January. And I think he's been one of the most underappreciated Chelsea players for the back end of this season, especially in the restart.
Yeah, so I mean, that is one thing I will say about Lampard, that he's never scared to drop somebody, because he's dropped Kepa before for a string of games. So he's not scared to get somebody out, and I do give him credit for that. But as far as bigging this man up for getting Chelsea a top four player, no way.
Yeah, but do you know what? They lost Hazard at the beginning of the season, or back in the last season. And you've seen other teams, like United, for example, when Ronaldo left, kind of go a little bit downhill when a world-class player like that leaves. And I thought Chelsea were going to struggle. I really thought they were going to struggle. Again, transfer embargo, Kepa in goal, the subkeeper not being any good. And you're thinking, well, where
still,
yeah.
Don't ever put Hazard and Ronaldo's name next to each other.
No, you misunderstood what I'm saying. In terms of the gravitas and in terms of the importance of the player to the club, because Hazard carried them for a couple of seasons, didn't he? All right, their title winning seasons, whatever. You know, even last season he was their best player. So for them to lose a player like that, you think they're going to struggle. But come on, in with a shout of top four, they've got their top four. They're in an FA Cup final as well. It's been a successful season so far, I think. Anyway,
yeah, it's definitely been a successful season. That you can't take that away from him. But as to say how the plaudits are going for him, they're very overblown. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, I'll tell you what. If his name was, I don't know, Jimmy Riddle, right? Jimmy Riddle, and he'd just come from Derby County, being his first managerial job, and he walks into a Chelsea team with zero, well, hardly any managerial experience. I think he's done a good job, but then again, you know, he fell out with Leeds United, didn't he, Frank Lampard?
No. Okay, I'll stop you on that, whoever Jimmy Riddle is, and say that he wouldn't have got the Chelsea job if he had failed at Derby. Yeah. So we just end that one there.
We're being hypothetical here. Okay, because his name is Frank. Because his name is Frank Lampard, of course he's going to get more recognition. Of course he's going to get more hype around him. I get it. It's, you know, he's Redknapp's fucking nephew as well. Let's not be around the bush here, right? So there is an element of privilege here.
In no time.
There is a big element of privilege here. I'm using that word because I can, right? So at the end of the day, yeah, I think he's got the job because he's a club legend and because of who he is. You know, but at the end of the day, I've still got to say that even if his name was something different, Jimmy Riddle, right? With 1 year's experience at Derby County, getting him to a playoff final and then walking into the Chelsea team with, as I said, bang average players overall, and then to get them fourth and into an FA Cup final. I think he's done a good job. I think he's done a very good job.
But well, that's fair enough. But I will say Sarri had a better season where the team looked like they didn't like him. And he still got him a European
trophy. I agree.
Yeah.
They got top four and they won a European trophy. I agree. I'm not disagreeing one bit. I'm not disagreeing with that at all. I'll give you that.
I'll go one further for everyone with this. I think Chelsea have been very smart with the whole approach of this. You've given the job to Lampard, club legend, with transfer embargo. So he's already got that sort of mitigating factor on his side if things don't go to plan. But I think tactically, and it goes unsung a hell of a lot of the time, Jody Morris has been a key feature for Chelsea this year in the backroom staff. Because he's the one that developed these youngsters when he was the Chelsea under-23s manager. He was the coach that developed Mason Mount at Derby County when he was there on loan. So he's actually that link between Chelsea finally using the plethora of youngsters that they signed from before loaning them out to every single fucking Dutch club in the country, in Holland. He's been the one that has tactically made them a bit more solid. And you've seen that in games this season. Mikel Alonso is not a left back. He's a goal scoring left back. So they changed it to 3-4-3, where he has that license to roam down the left hand side and get forward and get those opportunities. We know Rudiger, Christensen, Zuma, and the back line are all calamitous, whatever pairing you put together. So he's played a back three, and he's put Cesar Azpilicueta in there to steady it up a little bit and to allow for the overlapping runs where you see it on the left-hand side. We said it about the Man U game. Alonso was on the left-hand side, and they had Azpilicueta on the left of the back three because it allowed him to overlap on the right side of Reece James.
Mm.
And that's not, all due respect to Frank Lampard, that is not a Frank Lampard thing to pick up on. Because he, as you say, he's Harry Redknapp's nephew, so he's going to be there going, just run around a bit, lads. Yeah, go on, son, you're great. Yeah. And you've got Jody Morris in the background going, right, this is the phase of play. This is what you need to do here. And he'll become another one. He'll become part of the golfers club. Mm. And whilst we've, and I'll be the one to admit this, I've been one that's been, oh, it's great to see some fresh, you know, young English blood in the Premier League, you know, Frank Lampard getting a chance, Eddie Howe, and like you talk about the young English managers, but give it another 5 years. If they're still getting jobs when they're not doing great, all we've done is just replace the old guard with the new guard.
Yeah, I agree.
And I'm just worried about who's going to become the next Alan Shagapadri out of the lot.
Well, I don't think it's going to be Nuno Espirito Santo. Let's talk about this fella, because they've had a very long and arduous season. We know all about their campaign starting in July and ending in July. Granted, they've had the 3-month break. Coach, do you think they'll be disappointed? Do you think Nuno will be very disappointed with the way that his club have kind of ended the season? Because their form hasn't been great. I know they've had injuries. Here we go again, injuries. But again, they were very, very close to Europa League qualifying in those spots. And they only ended up 7th when they could have probably ended 5th.
Yeah, I think because they were even closer to battling for a Champions League spot not too long ago as well. So for the capitulation of some sorts to have happened, I don't think you'd be happy. But 7th, still in the Europa League, it's not all negative for them. And they are very good. They are good enough to win the Europa League, in my opinion. So I think he'll be gutted that they finish 7th, but he'll tell the players, look, we've got a bit of time to rest, and then we go again in Europe, and we can go and win this competition. It wouldn't surprise me to see them back on their feet in no time. But 7th is still a very good position for them. I mean, they finished below teams that are, I mean, former Premier League winners. So it's not a terrible thing. But yes, he's ambitious and he wants the best for the club. So he would be a bit disappointed.
Yeah, but you forget that they've got a second leg against a Greek team owned by a fellow that's mates with Jorge Mendes and Mino Raiola, and yeah, so anything can happen in that second leg, my friend. Like I said a few months ago, I'm not suggesting that any tomfuckery, whatever you want to call it, tomfoolery is going to happen, or whatever. What's the word? Fuckwittery, or I don't know, what you jiggery pokery, whatever word, you know what I'm talking about here. But yeah, some dodginess. But yes, anyway, let's see. Is anything else to discuss?
I was going to say, should Wolves fans be worried about their manager being poached by a bigger club?
Like, but which club, though?
Yeah.
Which club?
Whether everyone jokes about, but I shouldn't joke about this, but what about Leeds, considering that Bielsa might be off to Barcelona, if the rumours are true?
Oh, he's not going to Barcelona.
Buy it. Someone, I want someone to buy it.
KG's too cute for this game, he knows.
Yeah, I'm too smart for that, Steve, come on now.
But, I mean, with the season coming to it, how do you think the teams are going to do that are coming up next year? Like, because you have West Brom that are notoriously known as boing boing baggy baggies, because they'll be up and down before you know it. And then you've got Leeds, who I think it'll be interesting to see how they recruit and what they can add on for the squad next year.
Yeah, I think I said already, and somebody stole my take, but I think that we'll finish around 10th, maybe 11th. I think we'll be more than fine with the quality of some of these teams, and if we add in any of the kind of players we've been linked to, then we'll be all right, more than all right. But I think we'll be fine. West Brom, they needed to recruit regardless of what happened this season. Their team is aging. They've got a couple of players on loan that aren't theirs, and they're two key players for them in Dean Garner and Pereira. So they're going to need to either get those back or look to replace them. Yeah, West Brom have got some work to do. Everybody does. Even some of the bottom of the league, Premier League teams have got work to do. There's so much to be done, but yeah, I think we'll be more than fine. And that's not just me talking as Leeds fan. I'm a football fan first off, and I can honestly say with my chest, none of those teams in the bottom half worry me. And that's not to say we're going to win every game against them. It's just that I don't fear any of these bottom of the league teams.
Okay, fair enough. One more thing before I wrap it up. Willian, he wasn't included in the matchday squad. So is it safe to say that he's leaving Chelsea now?
Yeah. He's probably joining Jose, isn't he?
Oh, Spurs.
I think he's going to go Arsenal. You reckon Arsenal? It could be, yeah.
Arsenal.
Oh, dear.
Well, the only thing I want to say is it was an anticlimactic end to the season, wasn't it? Overall. Nothing moved, really, in terms of teams moving positions a lot throughout the day. It was just the same as it was. When you compare it to the Championship, just a week ago, a few days ago, whatever, there was literally teams dropping from 4th to 6th to 7th whereas still were no one loved. A team that was sitting in the playoffs since Christmas or whatever, and they dropped out and finished 7th because of a 6-goal swing. That's what I mean. There was no drama or nothing like that today. It was as you expect it.
You don't talk about Budana Forest FC, are you, mate?
I'm talking about Forest, yeah. I thought you would have loved to have mentioned that one still. I'm surprised.
Inject it right here. See, I've got needle pricks, you know, Eddie Howe, United getting a top 4, Nottingham Forest. It's beautiful, honestly. Feed it to you. Feed me more. Yeah, there you go. Right, gentlemen, let's wrap it up. Thank you very much for your time. We've been going for close to 2 hours. Fuck me sideways. Kojo, thanks for jumping on. KG, thanks for jumping on. Steve, thank you for hopping on. So, yeah, let's do Twitter handles before we wrap it up. Coach.
Yep, Man Podcast, Free Midfield on Twitter and on YouTube and all the other listening audio pods, and my personal one at Coach Kojo.
Superb. KG.
KAGEY_, that is me.
Lovely. Steve.
Fat Luke Short. No, I'm kidding. it's yours truly, Mr. Mac.
Superb. Well, we're on Twitter at Shoot Defence. We have an Instagram as well. And I'm going to go get some super malt because I'm really thirsty.
Yeah.
So until next time, ladies and gents, which will probably be the next couple of days for our season review. Adios.